Welcome. Today, I'm going to do a solo episode. I have so many of you email me and say, Amy, I love it when you do solo episodes. So I thought, well, today I don't have a guest. And I decided that there's something I've really, really been wanting to talk about, something that's been fascinating to me for many years, but I had not quite formulated my theory around it and what I want to say about it. And so I'll just start out by saying that I've studied in the Krishnamacharya tradition for, almost 25 years now. And in our tradition, we like to say yoga is relationship. And we like to say you can tell if your yoga is working for you or not based on how your relationships are. Now, I think that leaves a lot of room for discernment. It doesn't mean we have to be happy all the time. It doesn't even mean we need to get along all the time. It doesn't mean we need to agree. In my mind, what that means is we need to be resilient in our relationships. We need to be authentic and be able to speak our truth. And hopefully the people we're in relationship with will receive that and hear us and see us. I think it means having boundaries, but also being compassionate and understanding when the other person has needs that are different than ours. So there isn't like a spiritual bypass happening here. It's not like, oh, if you had an argument with someone or you had to end a friendship or maybe you're going through a divorce that you automatically are terrible at relationships. Maybe those are signs that you are great at relationships. Maybe that friendship had come to a full cycle and needed a closure. Maybe that marriage had not been working for decades and you actually had the courage and the strength and the boundaries and the good communication to end it properly and appropriately. So let's just think for a moment what we mean by yoga is relationship, and you can tell how your yoga is going based on your relationships. I think that has a very, very wide range for, discernment and defining what that means to each of us.
Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We hope that you're enjoying this podcast each and every week. In addition to this podcast, Marlisa Sullivan and myself, Amy Wheeler, we are hosting a group inside the Polyvagal Institute. It's a free group where you can learn about yoga, yoga therapy, and polyvagal theory. We'd love to have you come on over there too to enjoy some of that free content. And I'll put the link in the show notes so that you can get over there easily. All right, let's go over and meet our guest for today.
I'd like to now talk about the Panchamaya model that we use in yoga, therapeutic yoga, yoga therapy, where according to the ancient Upanishads, there are five layers of the human system. And there's the physical layer, the breath layer, some people say mental emotional layer, the wisdom layer, also called the personality layer, and then the deepest layer, what Deskachar might say is your deepest emotions, and other people may say is more of a spiritual connection. That's the deepest one. So you've got these five layers, and Mr. Deskachar was famous for saying that if you really want to see change, if you really want to know how the yoga is filtering through your system and if it's working, he would say that that wisdom or personality layer that we call the Vijnanamaya layer, that actually is the one that will create the most transformation and change. This is fascinating to me, especially considering how many of us have trouble in our personal relationships. We oftentimes have wounding, relational wounding. And I think what Deskachar is trying to say is that our relational wounding from the past, probably a lot from our childhood, shows up today in our personalities and impacts our perception, impacts our ability to have discernment, our ability to have clarity. It impacts how we move through the world, how we ourselves communicate, if we even communicate our needs. That vijnanamaya layer, or that, what I said, wisdom, sometimes it's called the wisdom layer because it's like you've had enough life experience to know better now. That part of you that has a lot of sometimes what we might call vasanas and samskaras. And I'll just define those two terms for those of you who are maybe new to these concepts. A vasana is a leftover scent, a leftover residual imprint from something that happened previous in our lives and that we didn't fully digest that experience. And so it's still in there and it's waiting for its next opportunity to manifest and to try to work through it again. So you can think of it as if you've been cooking soup in a pot and maybe it's onion soup, even after you wash the pot, even after the soup is long gone, that pot may still smell like onion. And in fact, the next time you make a carrot soup, there may be a small bit of onion in your carrot soup, that we take this residual scent or imprint into the next thing. So when we talk about the vijnanamaya layer, the personality slash communication slash perception slash wisdom layer, in that layer, we have our vasanas from the past that we have not fully digested. Maybe I should take a moment to digress into what that means, full digestion. I'll get there in just a moment. Those residual scents impact our current decisions, our current choices, our current habits and patterns, which we call samskara. So leftover residual, without us even knowing, impacts current behavior and choices. All right, so let's just digress for a minute. How do we actually digest it? How do we even know it's in there? Well, number one, when we get triggered about something, that means there's some undigested residual vasana. Because if something distressing, something awful happens, and we're very triggered by it, that means there's something inside of us that isn't quite sure where we stand, isn't fully embodied, isn't fully, you know, feeling like we know who we are and exactly what we want out of the situation. Once you have those things figured out, you don't so much get triggered by external things. It's more like, oh, this is who I am. This is what I want. I'm going to move away or move towards something. I'm going to shift and I'm not going to think about it again. I'm just going to do what I have to do to move in the direction that matches what I need in life. And there's not a lot of emotional turmoil about that. It's just like, yeah, I got to move. Let's do it. So that is to say, the fullest digestion of anything that's really causing us a lot of suffering basically takes time. And we might have to revisit a similar situation a few times before we get that internal GPS or that internal security that allows us to just feel strong and confident, like we have discernment and we're going to do what we need to do according to our values. Once we figure that out, we usually don't suffer as much. It's the figuring out who we are and what we stand for that causes us the suffering. Now, back to the five layers, the Panchamaya model from the Upanishads, Taittiriya Upanishad, that basically says this Vijnanamaya layer is one of the most important ones that we can work on. It is where our relational wounding happened in the past and may continue to happen. And that a lot of the tools of yoga are here to help us with that suffering. That in fact, knowing our five yamas, our five ways that we are socially disciplined, that we interact with others, are very important to our personality and our relational wounds, obviously. The five niyamas, and I probably do a whole nother podcast on this because I'm giving a talk for the Singapore Yoga Therapy Conference in October about just this. But the niyamas, how do our personal disciplines basically make us feel more safe and secure and know who we are and, you know, stand up for ourselves when we need to, move towards things, move away from things, help us get clarity on this personality layer. And then we go into the postures, which are setting up our body for the prana to flow well, and for us to be able to sit comfortably in our breath work and our meditation, which leads us to our breath work, our pranayama, which is balancing the energies in our bodies. But most importantly, it's focusing our mind and cleaning our mind for meditation. We want to prepare our mind with pranayama for meditation. And then after that pranayama helps us to focus and clean the mind a little bit, there is a point where our senses start to draw inward called pratyahara in the eight limbs of yoga. And this is where our mind and our senses settle internally. And so many people are trying to meditate while very distracted with their mind going out, when in fact, we want to use the postures and use the breath work to encourage pratyahara to happen, encourage the senses and the mind to go inward and settle. And then from that settled place, we move into the last three limbs, which a meditative state, concentration, dharana, and then a merging or, you know, a real focus where you can maintain that focus, dharana, and then possibly absorption or total merging called samadhi. And then there's many layers to or steps to samadhi. So that is just to say that it is through the eight limbs of yoga that we start to really understand who we are, what our values are, why we're here, and be able to stand behind that and not be so disturbed by our own behavior, by our own inability to understand what we should do next. So I think those eight limbs of yoga are here to support us on that personality layer. And that's where I see most of the suffering happening with the clients that I work with. They come in and they say, I'm having a trouble with my mother-in-law, or I'm suffering because my boss at work is not recognizing me, or my child doesn't want any connection with me. Like, usually these are very tangible things that people come with that they're suffering from. I've noticed that in my personal life, but also my professional life, that a lot of our deepest suffering comes from our relationships or that vijnana maya layer. And that goes back to our relational wounds that we had imprinted into us during childhood, probably, which goes back to what I already mentioned, our vasanas, those emotional leftover residuals causing our current behavior, our current samskaras. So it's all very connected. And I think we don't spend nearly enough time looking at how we can use yoga in our relationships to be more clear, to be more authentic, to figure out what our own needs are, to communicate better, to express what our needs are, to deal with the disappointment that comes when someone can't meet our needs, and then find strategies to get our needs met. I mean, there's a whole lot of work here. One of the things that I have loved combining with my personal yoga practice is nonviolent communication created by Marshall Rosenberg. It's a four-step process to really understand yourself. I think it's like the outline for how to have satyam, satyam being, you know, telling the truth, but also saying it in a way that other people can hear it, even when it's hard. I think that that goes a long way, because when you're going through this process of what am I observing? What are my feelings around this? What are my needs that are met or unmet? And can I make a request? When you go through Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication process, 99% of that work is internal work. What would a camera see while observing the situation? Not my judgment, but what would a camera see? That's a hard one. How do I feel about this? Feeling the sensations in my body and figuring out, oh, that sensation means I'm angry, or that sensation means I'm feeling insecure, or that sensation means I'm confused. What are your feelings? And then what are the needs underneath those feelings? If you don't want to feel confused, your need is to have clarity. Where does this relationship stand? And then finally, and here's the very tail after you've done all of that, and that takes a lot of work. The very end is, can you make a request? And here's the hard part, without the expectation that that person is going to meet your request. You're saying it, here's my needs. Could you meet this request? And I know that you don't have to meet that request, but I'm letting you know that this is where I'm at. So that whole process of nonviolent communication by Marshall Rosenberg is a beautiful process for doing work on this Vijnanamaya layer. And by the way, there is so much information on the internet about nonviolent communication that is free. And then you add AI into it and you've got everything you'd ever need. There are free groups, there are free workbooks, there are free cards, there are free talks. I mean, just type it in, Google it in, and you will have everything you ever wanted about nonviolent communication. You could do that for free to work on your Vijnanamaya layer, the layer or the part of you that needs to heal these relational wounds, that needs to communicate better, that needs to get to know yourself better, that has wisdom. You know, all of that relational work really, really is benefited by nonviolent communication. I think it's a beautiful practice to think about. And, you know, there's even voices out there that are teaching a decolonized version of nonviolent communication. So you might type in nonviolent communication decolonized, and there's some beautiful teachers out there that are taking it to the next level. All right. So with that said, we've been going through the eight limbs of yoga. We've been going through what is a vasana, what is a samskara. We've gone through the Panchamaya model, the five layers of the human system. I'm trying to bring you to this place where I can help you understand that our yoga practice, which might happen on the mat, it might happen on the meditation cushion, it might happen while chanting, it might happen while being in relationship and practicing your yamas and your niyamas. There's many ways to practice yoga, but basically, there will come a point where hopefully you will have very high emotional intelligence. And what do you know? But when we get higher emotional intelligence, it's always a work in progress. It's going to be a lifelong path for most of us, because a lot of us, our suffering is due to our past and our relational wounds that aren't healed. But what can we do to promote our emotional intelligence so that we have less suffering on the Vijnanamaya layer? Let's first talk about what is the definition of EI, emotional intelligence. It refers to this ability to recognize and understand and manage, number one, your own emotions, to recognize your emotions, to understand your emotions, to manage your emotions, and then eventually be able to express your emotions in a way that the other person can hear it. So that's a whole life study right there. And then secondly, the second part of emotional intelligence, after we figure out all of that, is to basically know that other people are not going to be highly emotionally intelligent. That's just a fact. Can you hold your emotions and the space and all the work that you've done? Can you hold that while at the same time acknowledging that maybe somebody at work or somebody at home, your teenager, your parent, has not done that work? They are not going to be emotionally intelligent, and that's okay. They may want to learn those skills, they may not, but it doesn't matter. Your side of the fence is clean. You are doing your best in these relationships, using your emotional intelligence, whether they want to do their part or not. Now, the funny thing is, almost always, a shift in one person creates a shift in the relationship. I'm not saying they're going to come around and be like, oh, I want to start doing yoga, or oh, I want to practice Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication, or I want to study yoga philosophy. It may not be that direct, but I can almost promise you that something good will happen. And I always hear this. People's family members say, you've changed. You're different. We're getting along better. I think you understand me now. I feel seen. I feel heard. I feel more connected to you. And that's enough. They don't have to go learn about yoga or emotional intelligence. If you working on your emotional intelligence can get them to feel more connected, to feel more heard and seen, that's enough. Now, one thing I want to say, emotional intelligence starts with you recognizing, understanding, managing, and expressing your own needs and emotions. Please don't skip over that step, or we're going to have a big spiritual bypass. You're going to get resentful and angry. You're going to be a doormat, and you didn't really do the work. You just became this goddess of emotional compassion and empathy that actually probably isn't doing the work. So I personally am going to be working on step one my whole life. I don't pretend to be able to hold that kind of space for other people yet. I can do it occasionally. I can do it for an hour during a yoga therapy session. I can put my mind to it and do it for a half a day with my family, but it's not who I am yet. And I have met very, very few people who are completely in touch with their own emotions and managing them well and expressing them well and able to hold space for people who aren't. That would be a miracle. So, but let's say that you decide that you want to work on your stuff, your side of the fence, because there is potential for change in relationships, even if the other person doesn't do anything, doesn't learn anything. So many of us want to jump over and be like, oh, I want you to learn what I'm learning. No, hold back. Do your stuff. Let them do their stuff. You shift and see if maybe they want to shift, not due to this cognitive, intellectual, academic learning like you're doing, but rather because they feel differently in relationship with you.
Hello, are you interested in polyvagal theory? Well, if so, I have two really cool things you might be interested in. One is an app called the Mighty Network, where Marlisa Sullivan and myself are hosting a yoga therapy and polyvagal theory group, and it's free. You can just join the group, come in and share thoughts and ideas on polyvagal theory, yoga, and yoga therapy. We try to post every week, stimulating a community around yoga, the nervous system, and polyvagal theory. So we'd love to have you join us. In addition, we are giving a 7-week class on polyvagal theory and yoga starting in the fall. You can find that on www.polyvagalinstitute.org, O-R-G. So we'd love to invite you to that 7-week course that's starting in September of 2024.
So the key components of emotional intelligence include, number one, self-awareness and the ability to recognize your own emotions and then kind of understand the impact that those have on your thoughts, your behavior, and your decisions. So for example, when I get angry, every single time, I think it's a good idea to write that email. History shows me that is not a good time for me to communicate when I'm angry. So I need to have the self-awareness to recognize, oh, I'm angry. And even if I'm correct, even if I'm feeling very righteous, this is not the time to write the email. This has an impact on my behavior and my decisions, and I probably shouldn't go there. I should probably have my husband help me write the email, or go to AI and have them help me write an email, because I'm not in my right mind right now. So that's self-awareness. And there's many flavors of that, right? The next key to emotional intelligence might include self-regulation. This ability to manage my emotions in healthy ways and to not be controlled by my impulses. Also, to manage my self-regulation so that I can have integrity and I can show up in the world the way I want to show up in the world. And I question myself about this quite a bit. I wonder if other people do too. When we feel regulated, meaning I feel stable, I feel strong, I feel clear, can we show up and speak truth and feel good about that, even if it wasn't a very pleasant message? Can we say exactly what we need and give the message that has integrity that needed to be said at this time to this person? And then can we step back and be like, I said my piece and I'm good and I have integrity with that? That is very self-regulating. Hiding and pretending there's nothing wrong and fawning, oh my God, fawning to try to make the relationship smooth and make people like us. And oh my gosh, that is so dysregulating. That is not regulating. Now, some of you might say, I can't show up and say what I think. That will create a fight. That will create everybody in the house to be dysregulated. It's just not possible. Well, that's discernment too. You might be surprised if you show up with your own self-awareness and your own self-regulation, what can and can't be communicated. But you might also understand that this is not the time or the place, or this person is not going to be able to hear this. We might need some support around us before I give this message. I mean, there's quite a bit of discernment that's needed in all of this. And I think most people fall on the end of the continuum where they think, I'm right, I'm perfect, the other person is wrong, they did this to me, they're horrible, and they're so messed up that they can't hear it anyway, so I'm not even going to try. That's most of us come in with that attitude. Or there's no need to talk about this again. I've done this 100 times, right? Probably that goes back to the self-awareness and that anger or that upset to understand that you're probably not even in a place where you can have that conversation yet. And let's be honest, sometimes it takes weeks or even months or years to cool down and see it for what it was and to get a little detachment and not feel so triggered. And that's okay too. We can take time. We can create distance if we need to. And we want to tell people that. We don't want to punish them with space. We want to say, I'm sorry, I'm not able to do that at this time or have that conversation because I'm still working through it and I'm going to need space. Here's about how long I think it's going to take me. 24 hours, 48 hours, 2 months. You know, give people an understanding of how long they might need to wait to have a conversation so that they can prepare their expectations. All right, so we've talked about these key components of emotional intelligence, including self-awareness, self-regulation. Next one, ooh, this is a hard one, social awareness. Your ability to perceive and understand the emotions of others, as well as sensing social cues and dynamics. Some of us are better at this than others. Those people who are neurodivergent, my gosh, this is a hard one. It is so hard. It's not intuitive. It might be something you really need to work on. I had a situation yesterday, in fact, that I had to come home and ask my husband, what does that mean? And I'll tell you, just as an example, I was in an office. I was sitting across the desk from someone. It was their office. I had asked when I came in, do you have 5 or 10 minutes to speak? They had said yes and given me permission for that time period. I had talked and had what I considered a very nice conversation for about 5 minutes. And then mid-sentence, my sentence, the person got up from their desk and I thought they were going over to get some coffee or something over on the table over there. But instead, they just walked over to near the door and stood there. And I was still sitting at the desk and I turned around to see what they were doing because I thought they were getting coffee or something. And I noticed they were standing at the door and I was like, oh, I think that might be my signal that this meeting is over, even though it seemed like it was going so well and I was staying within the time frame that I had requested. I was like, oh, I think this person wants me to leave now due to who knows why, their time constraints. Maybe I was annoying them. I don't really know. But so I quickly got up and I said, oh, okay, thank you. It's been really nice talking to you. And I left and went and had lunch. But it was such a strange way for me. That's not a way that I would communicate nonverbally. I would probably say something like, well, my time is complete, or I need to move on to my next task. It's been really nice talking with you. Like I would have a different way of communicating that rather than standing at the door. And I'm not saying this person was wrong. I'm just saying I didn't understand what the person was trying to tell me in that moment. So I came home, I asked my husband, he said, oh, maybe that was her way of saying this meeting is coming to a close. Then I went and I went on AI, GPT chat, and I said, what does this mean? So there are ways that if we honestly don't understand social awareness, we can get help. And another thing, I don't know about all of you, but I have learned so much about social situations and awareness from reading the comments on social media, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or TikTok. People will go in and tell a story and say, here's what happened, and get 5,000 people's opinions. And a lot of times there is similarities in the opinions. Not that looking outside of ourselves is always the answer, but it has taught me a lot about what is normative. Do I agree with that? Do I not agree with that? Wow, I never considered that point of view. It's been really interesting to see, especially around social awareness, what some people feel a boundary should be. Of course, they're all disagreeing with one another, but it's just food for thought to try to understand these social cues and dynamics. All right, so another key to emotional intelligence includes relationship management. Being able to utilize emotional awareness to kind of navigate these social interactions effectively and then communicate our needs and to resolve conflicts, you know, that is a big deal. And again, that goes back to you have done your work. You can recognize your own emotions and understand them and manage them and express your needs. And at the time that you're doing all of that, you're also managing a relationship, which takes a lot of emotional, you know, gas, I guess you will. Like, I'm not saying that one person should always be the manager of the relationship. I've been in a heck of a lot of conversations and relationships like that where the other person was not being an equal part in managing our relationship together, but I will move away from those. Eventually, I can't do that anymore. I can't be the one carrying the relationship. So, you know, having that discernment about I'm willing to hold it for a period of time, but if you don't step up and do your part in helping to manage this relationship, I can't be the only one expending energy for us. So again, these are four of the top keys that help us to understand emotional intelligence: having self-awareness, self-regulation, social awareness, and then possibly relationship management. Now, if we tie this back to the Vijnana Maya layer of the Panchamaya model, that personality layer that's all about having wisdom to understand that each of us perceives the world differently, wisdom to have enough life experience to understand how certain things might play out, wisdom to communicate properly, wisdom to repair those relational wounds, right? When we're talking about emotional intelligence, I basically think that has a very, very strong connection to our Vijnana Maya layer. And as I've said, I think nonviolent communication is a wonderful way to approach that layer. But also, as we just learned, self-reflection, self-awareness, self-regulation, all of those are basically what we're doing with our yoga practice. And it just makes yoga a very amazing, beautiful way to practice emotional intelligence if we want to use it that way. And some might say, well, why do I want to do that? I prefer the asana. I prefer the breathing. I prefer chanting. Yoga nidra. All of that are tools to help with this, with our ability to manage ourselves and manage our relationships. So you might say, well, why is that even important? I mean, I think it's obvious, but I'm just going to lay it out here for you. You can have better relationships with improved communication, more empathy, better conflict resolution skills. You can respond more appropriately so you don't create problems for yourself in the future. And you will feel like a more safe person. There will be more trust and cooperation, which of course we want safety and trust and cooperation. Now, you're thinking, but they're not doing it. And I'm here to tell you, we're not in charge of them. If they want to do it, they want to work on self-awareness, self-regulation, they will. If they don't want to, they won't. That's not our business. I will promise you that if you work on it, things will shift. They may shift and that person may move out of your life, and that's okay too. Or they may come to some different way of being in relationship with you. I would say that both of those things are a positive thing, that it's okay if they move out and it's okay if they stay, but we're not going to continue to do what we've always done and be dysfunctional together and hope for a different outcome. That is not happening. All right, so why else might you want to work on this vijnana maya layer, or what I'm calling emotional intelligence? You will be a better leader, a leader of your family, a leader of your friend group, a leader of your, colleagues. Again, you're going to be able to manage conflicts. You're going to be able to help people understand and hopefully regulate. That's a big deal. Now, you may choose times where you don't want to be the leader. You're like, today I'm going to be the follower. You guys figure it out. But having that choice of when do you want to lead and when do you want to follow is really cool. Another reason you might want to work on your emotional intelligence, aka vijnana maya layer, is better mental health. By promoting self-awareness and self-regulation, you'll be better equipped to have more resilience, to manage your stress, to cope with challenges, especially in the face of adversity. You'll be better prepared to do that. Conflict resolution deserves a category of its own. To be able to resolve conflict constructively by promoting an understanding, other people, as well as yourself, having empathy for yourself. Don't forget that, empathy for yourself and others. And I would argue you have to learn how to give empathy to yourself before you can give it to others. And then being able to negotiate or co-negotiate the needs. What are my needs? What are your needs? Are there strategies that we can find that will meet both of our needs? That goes back to Marshall Rosenberg and finding a win-win solution, finding a win-win solution using nonviolent communication. All right, another reason we might want to have better emotional intelligence is it gives us clarity because we know exactly what we're dealing with. We don't have to feel confused or what's going on here. If you have clarity, you can make better decisions. So when we're super emotional, when we have a lot of undigested emotions, when we're feeling triggered, that is not the time to make decisions. That alone, just knowing that we're triggered, means there is leftover residual of onion flavor on the inside of the pot. Doesn't mean you're not right. Doesn't mean that you don't, have a reason and a right to say what you need to say, but just know that it's got the onion on there too. That awareness is really important. Personally, I'd rather scrub the pot a few times and start over for my carrot soup and then come at the problem in a very clear, calm way. Again, where I can be self-regulated and I can hold the space for the other person to maybe be regulated, possibly, and go at it that way. And of course, I'm talking best case scenario here. This is not going to happen in real life. This is idealistic, but it's something to think about. It's something to work towards, not in a way that we want to beat ourselves up or shame ourselves or judge ourselves or try to be perfectionistic about this, but rather like, I want to connect in my relationships. I want to have more clarity in decision making so that I suffer less. Hopefully, I can make others suffer less too, but really, it's just a lifelong longing to feel as good as I can feel and not make a bunch of mistakes where I'm hurting people. And I would say if we did this 60 to 70% of the time, we are like over the moon amazing. The other 20, 30, 40%, when we can't do it, we just have to have compassion for ourselves and look at, okay, that didn't go so well. I'm going to try to do better next time and be very gentle and very tender with ourselves because none of us is perfect. None of us are perfect. Last but not least, when we foster emotional intelligence, we are able to grow, have that growth mindset. And I would say that when I do my best, even when I fail, even when I screw up, But I look at it and I think, okay, growth mindset, this didn't go so well. What can I do that I don't have to repeat this suffering? That in and of itself, that self-reflection and that ability to identify strengths and weaknesses, that makes me a more authentic person and helps me to have more confidence because I've been honest with myself. And even though I wasn't perfect and I didn't do it right, at least I'm honest with myself and I've got a growth mindset. And I know that there are some things that I can try to do better and I'll forgive myself. I'll give myself compassion with the three steps mentioned by Kristen Neff, which I could go over that in a minute if you're interested. And then move on and move into the next thing without a bunch of heaviness or shame or guilt or judgment, that kind of thing. So if you're interested in the self-compassion from Kristen Neff, basically it is acknowledging that you're hurting, that something has gone wrong and it doesn't feel good. Soothing and pacifying yourself, talking to yourself like you would someone that you care about and that you want to be tender with them and say, it's okay, honey. You did your best and it didn't turn out the way you thought. Then reminding yourself that you're not alone, that many, many, many people throughout all of time and history have suffered with this exact thing that you're feeling. You're not alone. It's not to take the focus off your suffering and say, oh, you know, grow up or you're being soft. It's not that. It's just to acknowledge you're not alone. And then third, moving into a mindful state of self-awareness where you can reflect on what's happened and be mindful in your actions going forward. So again, we have these tools out there that we can use to help us suffer less. And, you know, the Kristen Neff work is similar to nonviolent communication. You could do an entire lifetime on how to practice self-compassion. So we're giving you a lot to think about today. All right, so I want to finish up with what emotional intelligence is not, as well as if we're looking at this in the personality layer of the five layers of the human system, because I think they're very similar, what does it not mean? Or what does it mean to not be in good relationship? It doesn't mean that you're suppressing your emotions. We're not asking you to suppress them. We're actually asking you to go towards them and reflect on them and get comfortable with them. So it's the opposite of suppression. So much easier to suppress. We're not asking you to become overly emotional. That is not emotional intelligence. That is not yoga's relationship. In fact, as I've described today, we don't want to approach the other person with any of our observations or feelings or needs until we've done that work inside of ourselves and kind of worked through our own triggers and gotten clarity about who am I, what do I value, why is this upsetting me, what needs were not met, and what could my request be? Knowing they may or may not be able to meet that request, but my gosh, that's not overly emotional. That means you've done a whole lot of work before you even approach the other person. We are also, if we're practicing emotional intelligence, we're not ignoring or disregarding logic or critical thinking in favor of emotions. In fact, we're working through those triggers so that we can come at it from a more balanced, stable place and then have those hard conversations. We're also not manipulating others with our emotions. We're not having crocodile tears to try to manipulate somebody into feeling sorry for us. We're doing our work. We're showing up as an empowered, strong person. We don't need to manipulate. We're not avoiding difficult emotions. We're not denying them. We're actually leaning in and working through them. And maybe most important, we don't expect mastery of our emotional intelligence anytime soon. We don't. The only way we can learn is to fall into the pothole again and again and again and again. And maybe, just maybe over time, we will finally walk around that pothole. I know for me, I'm very hard-headed. I've had to fall in that same pothole and do that same thing for decades. So we don't expect your emotional intelligence to just improve because you said today you're going to work on that. It is going to take time. And that's why this tenderness and this gentleness has to come in, this self-compassion, because you're going to get sick of falling in that pothole before you figure it out. Emotional intelligence is also not all about positive emotions. It's actually probably more about figuring out how to understand and reflect upon the not so positive emotions, the ones that are causing us suffering, the ones we might say are negative. It's the ability to work through that and emotionally digest that. That's what we're talking about. So those are just a few things that I wanted to wrap up with to say, what is emotional intelligence? What is not emotional intelligence? I think we've given you so much to think about today, maybe too much for one podcast. There are show notes. And in fact, I don't know if you've seen this now, but the podcast is offering, you know, if you click on it, on many platforms, I know it happens on Apple, there's actually a transcript of the podcast now, which is so exciting. So we've given you so much to think about today. If you want to go try to find that transcript in the show notes, that might be helpful. And just pick out one little thing that you might want to work on this month. And, you know, one of my dreams going forward, because I feel so strongly about this Vijnana Maya layer, one of my dreams is to maybe have a whole year around emotional intelligence. I'm considering this for 2025, and I'd love your feedback. You can email me if you think this sounds like fun, but I thought it'd be great to have like one concept of emotional intelligence that we work on each month for a year as a community. I don't know. Tell me what you think of that. It's something I'm considering for 2025, and I'm already making plans for 2025. So let me know, you know, if you like that idea, and maybe that is something we could do together as a community. Thank you for listening today. It's been such an honor and a pleasure to be with you, and I look forward to talking with you next week. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. You can also see the video versions on YouTube. If you'd like to get early release, you can always support us as a Patreon member. If you'd like to find us on YouTube or Patreon, just type in the Yoga Therapy Hour and Optimal State, and you'll find us. All right. Thank you for your support. We appreciate you so much.
A special thank you to our team here at Optimal State. We are truly a global family. George Mantuan, one of our executive producers. Adam Satchel, senior media producer and sound engineer from the Philippines. Krishna Panchal, a producer from Canada. Modupe Abdullahi, who does the show notes and is an editor for us from Nigeria. And Peter Morley, who wrote and produced the music for this show, who lives in Australia. Find more about Peter's work at www.zenmusic.biz. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.